Welcome to the Wellbeing Ignites Well-Doing podcast, produced by OOT Social Health, where the focus is on exploring the essential elements that drive organizational success, human-centric leadership. Hosted by Adjoa Boahidi, principal of AKB Talent Edge.
Ignites Well-Doing podcast. My name is Tiagi Delanerol, and I'm your host today, filling in for Adjoa K. Boahidi. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Greta Jackson, Employee Engagement and Culture Enrichment Director at Tegria. We're going to be talking about elevating workplace culture, strategies for engagement and inclusion. Ultimately, we're going to be exploring Greta's innovative approaches to fostering employee engagement and building a culture of inclusion. This episode will highlight her strategies for leveraging engagement data, creating meaningful employee experiences, and aligning organizational culture and diversity, equity, and inclusion goals. So to give a little bit of background on Greta, Greta Jackson is a visionary leader in employee engagement and workplace culture. As the Employee Engagement and Culture Director at Tegria, she spearheads initiatives that drive connection, inclusivity, and organizational improvement. Greta's leadership has transformed employee engagement, as demonstrated by her development of innovative programs like Fun Fact Fridays, which significantly increased participation and fostered community within the workplace. With a focus on leveraging engagement data and providing strategic insights, Greta partners with leaders across Tegria to establish measurable goals for cultural advancement. Her work reflects a commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion, as evidenced by her success in expanding membership in affinity groups and implementing leadership training programs. Welcome, Greta. Thanks so much for being on.
Hi. I'm so happy to be here today.
Yes, likewise. You know, in every episode that we have, we normally get to start things off by learning a little bit about the leaders, really at the core of who you are as a human, because, of course, we care about human-centric leadership. So we're going to start off with a couple questions from Marcel Proust's questionnaire, two questions in particular that really, again, talk about your true character. So the very first one is, which talent would you most like to have?
That's a great question. I would say I would love to be an artist or a sculptor, you know, where I could sculpt and make things with my hand. Currently, I probably could not even make like an ashtray of any sorts, but like I would love to make something like that with my hands.
Okay. Well, we got to get you into like a clay modeling, you know, yes. pottery making situation. That needs to be on the bucket list, right? For Christmas fair, so yes. Hopefully birthday. And okay, so now kind of, this is a slightly morbid, but if you were to die and come back as a person or thing, what would it be?
So for this question, I really want to focus on a thing. Okay. I would love to come back as the microphone at the 1963 March on Washington. That microphone, you get to hear all the great knowledge being poured that comes through you and out to all the people. And just to be able to be there and to be able to also, like, in a sense, share that information as the microphone is what I would love to be.
Wow. Yes. Have not heard that before. And that is very true, right? Just to be in that environment at such a historic point would be phenomenal. But yes, a microphone, right? Receiving all of that input, all of that data. There you go.
Yeah, absolutely.
So now really just kind of getting into your role, right? In terms of, you know, what you've been really focusing in on, right? Creating a culture of engagement. Mm-hmm. How do you design and execute initiatives that genuinely connect remote employees and foster engagement across diverse teams?
So one of the things I love to think about first is that climate reflects organization's mood. Okay. And culture is the way that, you know, we do business. It's the way we do things. It's tied to our values. So I separate the two out into two distinct entities. Okay. And then I begin thinking about what is the current mood? Where do we stand on our values? And then I begin thinking of ways that we can start to move the needle in particular areas if need be. I also love to look at data. So, and you know, data is wide ranging. Mm-hmm. And then what I want to do is I know that culture does not compete with the organization's operations. It reinforces those operations. So I have to also be conscious that the things that I create have an equal entry point for everybody, but does not impact the organization's operations at the time. So looking at the data, I rely on trends from the 35 interest groups that we have. Mm-hmm. I look where employees naturally gravitate to. I found out through Fun Fact Fridays that they naturally gravitate towards food, competition. They love to celebrate. So I make sure that those components do show in our larger events across the board.
Yeah.
I want to make sure that people really enjoy it. And so I've had to really spend some time thinking about what does participation look like in designing these initiatives. Mm-hmm. I find that word of mouth is the best advertiser and key driver here. So we can have these interest groups and I can post a question on Tuesdays or Thursdays, but I love that people will go back to their team and say, did you see that question today? Like in Fun Fact Friday, did you comment on this? Or I've had people even tag people and say, you need to answer this question. And it's been great to learn the stories behind why they were tagged. And once they, you know, participate, it's great. And so I map out a plan based on all those things that I think about, how can we execute them? I think about cost involved. I think about who do I want to participate? Everybody, of course, but it may lend itself towards a particular team more than others. And then I also make a values connection because our values are who we are as an organization and everything we do are tied back to those.
Yeah, that's really great. I mean, it sounds like you really, you tie everything to your values, right? And then you also gather various data points. So how did you coming off of what you just shared, how did you come up with Fun Fact Fridays?
So I wanted a way to engage the entire organization when I am stepped into this role. And we all know that getting an email, things get lost. So we have Microsoft Teams. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, we have a general channel. I'm just going to try to post a question in there to see how it goes. And the first question, a lot who were participating. And then it was right before Thanksgiving. So before Thanksgiving, I put a question that said, if you have to eliminate one of the following Thanksgiving dishes, which one would it be? And that just literally, I thought my computer was going to buzz off. So many people took to that conversation and it was just a quick entry point, like to hear people discuss cranberry sauce and people say mac and cheese, you know, and to learn that people don't like sweet potatoes and that there's for some families, there's a tried and true recipe for cranberry sauce. Like it just became such a big conversation that kicked off Fun Fact Fridays. And so every Friday I engage in a question that I put out there that everybody loves to participate in. And even my own family will reach out and say, what's the Fun Fact Friday of the question of the day? And I'm like, what? They're like, well, we hear you talk about it, but we want to know. And so it's become this thing that my friends and family want to know. They discuss it. So it really is a great engagement tool for across any avenue.
Oh my God, just that alone, that tip alone, I think is so helpful for so many folks that are tuning in, right?
Yeah.
That they can potentially leverage something like that. Because I actually haven't heard this before from other leaders. So that's so great. And it's also nice how you mentioned earlier, you recognize that food, like there's a lot of foodies, right? Within your community that you serve. So it's great that you've tapped into that. Like you tapped into the, you know, the particular occasion, right, being Thanksgiving. And then you kind of tied it in with food, which really helped folks engage further, right?
It makes such a difference to know that what they're really interested in, what you're interested in and what they want to talk about, because it does build relationships, not just with myself, but with each other.
Yeah.
You know, I've even had someone go as far as to say they realize they live in the same town. And they were, one was like, I can't make it to the festival, but I would love a hot dog. And he was like, I'll get it for you and I'll drop it off at our house for lunch. And I was like, what? Like, you know,
so sweet. Yeah.
So great for, we work 100% remote. So for people to engage in that way and go out of their way adds another layer of connection.
Yeah, absolutely. So how do you leverage employee engagement data to shape your strategies and measure success? So like more around the data piece. How are you kind of taking various data points and really helping that bridge out your strategies?
So I look at data as a big puzzle, and there are various pieces. So we have, typically organizations have an engagement survey that they give annually.
Okay.
That's just one piece of the puzzle. It's a snapshot, as all data is, for a moment in time. Mm-hmm. So it's important to extend beyond that data and also the type of data. So for our affinity groups, we'll send out surveys to ask the members, what do you want to see this year? One group goes as far as to say, not only what do you want to see, but what would you be interested in leading a discussion around? I look at that data. I look at attendance data. It helps us know the timing of things. Like when I post for Fun Fact Friday, part of the key was to figure out what timing was better. So I had to look at the data, like if I post in the morning, if I post in the evening, do I post around lunchtime? And I finally nailed down a time. I look at not just the numbers, but also the qualitative data. Like, what are people saying, you know, in commentary? Those, I always leave a space for comments because I want to know, what are you thinking if people want to engage in that part of the survey? Also, I want to look at what's happening in the organization as well. Like, what big projects do we have? Because it may not be the appropriate time for me to launch a new initiative at the time. I also like to look at things over time, you know, so we do a survey after every major event that affinity groups do. I do a survey at least once or twice a year for interest groups. And I'm asking, what group do you love and want to stay forever? What group are you like, ah, that group, I'm not really interested in that group anymore. It doesn't really draw me to it. And what group should we add? And I've gotten a lot of great feedback on groups we should add. Like, we added a group around cars and motorcycles.
Oh, wow. Well, okay.
People wanted to discuss, you know, maintaining cars, types of cars, but motorcycles. And so we added that group. The other group we added was something called a Brady Bunch. We had a holiday group that kind of turns over, and holidays have a gap between them. But
yeah.
So I started doing a trivia question every day around noon-ish.
Okay.
What I have going on. And so people really love to chime in and try to guess the answer and not reveal the top three people that got the answer right the next day as a recognition part.
Okay.
And that really draws a lot of people around Brainy Bunch. And it was so popular that it's now actually its own group. We don't use it as a part of the rotation group anymore because so many people love to participate in the trivia piece.
Only girls. Wow.
I use that data to say, like, oh, we had a high engagement here, higher than what we would have when we had Christmas or a holiday. So I was like, that should be its own group. And so that data helped inform that decision-making process for me.
I'd love to know, like, how are you gathering this data? Is it really around, is it teams that you're leveraging, or is it a different other mechanism that you're leveraging?
So two things. It's definitely teams. We look at the analytics in teams, how many people are reacting, commenting. But it's also little surveys that we send out over time, like little pulse checks that I'll do around interest groups, around affinity groups, just to see. And also in conversations with people that I talk to, I often ask at the end of meeting with an employee, what's one thing you love that we do and what's one piece of advice that you have for me?
Wow. It really sounds like it's such a great place to work. And a lot of it is thanks to you because of the level of care and nurture from what I can see or what I can hear that you're doing for the members of your community. Yes. So you mentioned affinity groups, right, earlier. Now you've had some tremendous success in expanding these affinity groups. What strategies have been most effective in fostering these communities? Now you mentioned it a little bit already, but if you can expand on that, that'd be great.
Yeah. So let me talk about exactly what an affinity group is versus an employee resource group.
Yeah.
Some people may see that they're making the same thing and they're not quite the same thing. An affinity group is more social based on a particular interest. It's a group of employees that come together. So we have a women's group. We have a group around leadership. We have a group around different ethnicities. And we have a group around, trying to think of the other one off the top of my head here today. Wage, leaders, ethnicity. Oh, Family First and Caregivers is another group that we have. And so when we look at those groups, you know, they're just to come together and discuss topics that are important to those people that have an interest. An employee resource group is really about the business. So they're going to have impact or influence on business such as strategy and recruitment. So it's like you don't necessarily do that piece.
Okay. Do you feel like other companies see it the same way or do they, yeah, for the most part?
I think for the most part. I mean, I think there's more of a blended line now in between the two.
Okay.
Versus a clear distinction. So yes, employee resource groups still get together and do things around a particular interest of that group. And it may be social in nature, but they're also doing more impact. Like if there's a recruitment effort for a particular role, you can reach out to an employee resource group and say, is there someone you can refer? Or can we have you come speak to a possible group of new employees? And that way it's helping drive the business that way.
I see. Okay. Well, thank you so much for the clarification.
Yes. And so how I expanded the affinity groups is one, knowing what our true purpose is. Like if, you know, for our women's group, especially, you know, focusing in on it's about women, educating women, mm-hmm. you know, supporting women's growth and health, and having the backwards design is what's the perfect group look like?
Right.
And then how do we work backwards to get that? And really working with those leaders, I meet with the leaders typically once every other month. So a couple times a quarter, everybody has to do a charter. And so I work alongside them. I sit in their planning meetings. I offer ideas and strategies as well. In addition to that, you know, we have guest speakers come that provide great support for all of our employees. And we invite everyone. Even though you may not be a member of the group per se, but everyone's invited when we have a guest speaker and anyone can attend the meeting, they just have to reach out to say, hey, I want to try this meeting on. Like you try on to figure out what's the best pair of jeans to buy. That's right. Try out an affinity group and see if it's a good fit. It may not be a fit for everybody, but we do welcome people as they are. So they don't have to answer the, if there's a discussion question, they can put the answer in the chat. We meet people where they are and help support them in any way possible.
That's fantastic. So it sounds like that you really kind of, first off, I mean, you already answered it in a previous question, right? Like you're constantly listening to, you know, the feedback that you're getting from the employees and then you're adjusting affinity groups. It's not like you've just set it up and you're forgetting about it. You're essentially pruning, right? Like you're adding and you're kind of like taking away ones that are not maybe as active and really helping add value to all of the members.
Yes, for sure. It's really important listen more and talk less. So two ears, one mouth.
Yeah.
So to really hone in on that, because you do get such good information if you're listening and you can, you know, build great relationships more by listening than by talking.
Yeah, it's something that we all can get better at, right?
Yes.
So, and thank you so much for sharing that. So how, just getting into, you know, leadership training and development, how do your training programs for leaders such as mitigating bias and living with organizational values, influence overall engagement and culture?
So, you know, one of the most important things I think we can do is always be a lifelong learner. And so when you look at the training programs, especially around mitigating bias, bias shows up in so many different ways, unconscious as well as conscious bias. And mitigating bias will provide such great information for not only your recruiters, but also for your leaders as well. And we want them to take this information back. It's not like I just came and got it and now I don't share.
Yeah.
The values piece is so key because these trainings help build psychological safety mm-hmm. and trust within the organization. And we want things to be just in time, not just a training program because we need to do something, but it's just in time professional development and support that has actionable steps that hopefully sticks to that leader or to that individual that they continue to carry it forward and that will impact the team dynamics as well as organizational culture and climate.
Yeah. So is it something that you've instituted in terms of like annual training for leaders around things of this nature, or like how did the training programs really work?
So with mitigating bias, we definitely did it with talent. We did a couple of sessions because we really don't want to just say this is bias, this is how you mitigate bias, but let's actually practice, you know, understanding when the bias comes in an interview based on the questions that you ask. And then also sharing that with leaders also, because bias is critical also on teams and projects with clients. So also talking about it with them. And then the living the values is, although it's not a training we do every year, it is something we talk about, especially with new employees. We remind managers that, hey, we're talking to new employees, a new person on your team, about the values and how important the values are that we live. And that these trainings are available also on our training site that we use, so that our LMS, so people can go back and watch it again if need be. And if they have additional questions or they want me to come back and talk to their team, they're always welcome to reach out. And I'm always happy to show up and help in any way that I can to further the training that they've had.
I feel like you're so accessible, and I'm sure you get so much great feedback from everyone on the team. Okay, so moving on to, you know, your work with DEI and engagement, right? What does diversity, equity, and inclusion, and now belonging, right, play in the role of employee engagement strategies? How do you ensure that that's integrated into culture?
So to me, that's one of the lenses that we use to look through, right? We want to make sure that our culture is accessible to everyone and not just a particular group. I like to say that I actually used a dinner party, so I really love to focus on inclusion and belonging. So, you know, inclusion means I got the invite to the dinner party.
Right.
Belonging means I actually got to sit at the table and have the conversation, which also ties back to the equity piece. And I'm getting to sit there and have that conversation with people. I'm not just an attendee at this party, and I'll get invited to sit down and eat and have a conversation. And the diversity is at that same dinner table, no one's like, how could you say that? You know, they're just listening and welcoming to a different thought or perspective. Yeah. And to me, that's the best way I think about DEI being when I'm out with girlfriends. We don't all agree, but we hang out and we say, oh, that's an interesting point. You know, and we all sit down and break bread together and have a great conversation. So I take that same mindset into culture. I want it to be accessible. I want people to feel like I'm participating in something here at Tegria where I feel like I'm connecting with friends and fellow mates, like, oh, you know, I finally met my tribe, kind of in a sense where I can sit down and participate. And so it's really important that I think about that along the way. Even though we have interest groups that have different interests,
yeah,
I still pull everybody in to have that ability to participate or have an equal entry into interest groups, into affinity groups, into our yearly team building activity that it's for everyone. It's not just for one particular group.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great though. Like clearly you put so much thought and effort into everything that you're doing, right? And it goes back to the listening piece, and it also goes back to just from what I can see, just the nurture and care. Like you are really crafting the right type of ways to engage the workforce. So, when it comes to overcoming engagement challenges, you've encountered, you know, potentially different ways to build culture and engagement. How have you navigated those challenges?
So I would say there are like a few challenges that come to mind. For example, where I work in a 100% remote environment. And so we never meet in person. So how do I as a whole collective organization, we don't come together as, you know, 1,500 employees come together. We don't do that. But we can connect in other ways and we can come together in other ways. But working in a remote environment leads to lots of challenges, different time zones. You know, how do you pull all that together? But the main starting place of that is culture doesn't belong to one person. Culture belongs to all of us. And getting that message out to employees and to managers that we all have a hand in building culture is the first thing you have to overcome. Because even though in my title it says culture, it's not up to me. I need everybody collectively working together on this. The remote piece is dealing with the water cooler chats. How many times have we been in an office and we stood up over our cubicle with our salads or with our lunch and talked to the next person and said, "Hey, how was soccer this weekend? What'd you do this weekend? Did you see any interesting movies?" And so how do we create that same thing in a remote environment? And it's really through teams, you know, and building these interest groups where we can say, has anybody seen the latest Spider-Man movie? Is anybody watching Top Chef this week? You know, they're going to announce the winner next week. Who do we think is going to win? Is anybody watching? We have Bachelor Nation. We have Real Housewives of, you know, Tegria. And so, like, who's watching Real Housewives? Can you believe this happened? It's just a way for people to come together and connect, you know, when we don't have that ability to just stand up over the cubicle.
Yeah, that's so true. And so let me just try to understand this. So, because I know I recently read or saw something from Airbnb, for example. They're also remote first, right? But they decided that they're going to implement, I think, once a month, try to get together for once a month. Have you ever looked at something like that, or like once a year or an annual sort of thing? What are your thoughts around that?
I think it's a great opportunity, but you also have to think that in a remote setting, a lot of people have families.
Yeah.
So, and responsibilities, you know, and can they pull away from those responsibilities, especially during a school year? Yeah. And so the other thing is like, is it cost effective? Because could we take those same funds and do something great for employees that lands at their doorstep as well? And culture isn't about, you know, a t-shirt or things like that, but you could do other things like, could you buy lunch for your employees instead one day and have it delivered to their house? Can you do an ice cream float making class with employees? Because that just is, you know, that kind of thing is still pulling everybody together, but in their individual houses and their individual places of work, they come together and still have the same camaraderie, can still happen across the screen, which I think a lot of people think that there's something blocking them, but that's really not true.
Yeah. Yeah. You're bringing up such good points. Okay, so we're almost towards the end of the questions. I can't believe how fast this conversation is going. You know, now you've shared so many different insights, Greta. Thank you so much. Now we're going to look into the future a little bit, right? What do you see as trends or innovations that's ultimately going to help shape the future of employee engagement or workplace culture?
Fantastic question. I would say there are three new pillars, really.
Okay.
One is mental health is going to become its own pillar, I believe, outside of wellness. Yeah. Granted, a lot of people, a lot of organizations have wellness programs, but supporting mental health, I think, mm-hmm. will become its own pillar. And that pillar will help increase employee engagement because we have to build psychological safety and that everybody shows up as their authentic self, bring your whole self to work. And so yeah. how do we support the whole employee, not just the worker that we want helping us, you know, move initiatives forward, but how do we support that whole employee? Yeah. The next thing I would say is AI. I feel like AI is going to have a great impact on it. And I know a lot of people are like, AI, you know, but AI really can change culture because to me, that is where the data that I'm looking through, I can use AI to help give me trends that I may not have seen before. Mm-hmm. I think also when you automate that, I can spend more time with people and love yeah. testing through data. So I can build yeah. some more connection, you know, over yeah. time.
Be more human. Use AI to be more human.
Yes, use AI to be more human. It's going to give us great personalized information to help people connect in better ways.
Yes, I agree. I agree. So what's the third? What's the third pillar? Mental health, AI, and?
Virtual reality.
Virtual reality. Okay.
No, it sounds a little bit strange, but you think about it. We're not in an office setting. I'm thinking about remote work.
Yeah.
How could virtual reality or augmented reality come together to give remote workers an in-office feeling within yeah. their own homes? I think that's a little bit down the line, but I think it's a great way to do trainings. If we get everybody in an AR, like a virtual reality or augmented reality classroom of sorts yep. or location to learn and give them that practical practice right there in the moment versus here's a scenario that we have to read, but actually
yeah.
like something live in person happening. So I think that is actually the third thing that's going to be an innovation over time.
I love it. I feel like you should be providing consulting work for Gartner because I recently came out with Gartner's. Gartner came out with 9 trends that's emerging for 2025. I'll forward you the report after this. The link to the report. It's really fascinating. And actually, I think 2 of the 3 trends are noted in the report.
Oh, okay.
So there you go. So you're spot on, right? Gartner, and I know Gallup has come out with a number of reports around engagement as well, but this was specifically around future of work trends. And I think you're absolutely right, right? Like the mental health piece is so critical right now. Many of the leaders that we're speaking to are really cognizant of this, but also to go back to the VR and AR conversation, right? We were speaking with Neil Hunter from Deloitte, and Neil also brought up AR and VR with respect to learning and how it's really going to take learning to that next level, which I think ultimately we want to have a more immersive learning experience so that it sticks better, right? Yeah. Like we can retain the information. It really registers for us. So the more we could have it really feel like immersive, then the better it is for us.
I think especially for leaders, because sometimes as leaders, we may need to have a difficult conversation.
Yeah.
And we can give them the scenario and just talk about it, but actually to be immersed and to actually have that practice, especially with middle managers, with them being crushed, you know, yeah. from expectations from their employees and also from leadership, like AR. And VR will provide that space for them to be stronger, you know, feeling the pressure from both sides. So I think it's fascinating to really see how AR and VR will change all of the way that we learn in the workplace.
Yes. Well, there's a lot of companies right now that are focusing on this and, you know, it's coming, right? Like all of the technologies are really coming, tenfold. I know a lot of countries now are putting great emphasis on it. I just saw the EU put billions of dollars into AI, you know, so you can see all the different major, even geographies, right, really focusing on AI and AR and VR, which are emerging trends. So very last question. Can you believe it? Very last question. We want to roll back in time. We want to go back in time and think about, you know, Greta in your early 20s, right? So Greta, back when you were, you know, just out of school, early 20s, what kind of advice would you give yourself? Now knowing everything that you know now, what type of advice would you give your younger self?
I love to tell my younger self the lottery numbers, but in addition to me, I would definitely say embrace imperfection and the journey. Because, you know, we all, like, I personally strive to try to be perfect, which is not realistic, and I've worked through that. But, you know, embracing imperfection, that's how we learn, that's how we grow, and the journey that we're on.
Yeah.
You know, even though we may stumble or sit down on the side of the log on the road and just like, I'm just taking a break, as long as you get back up and keep moving. So I think you have to embrace both of those.
That's such great advice. And actually, it's advice that I've heard from so many leaders. So many leaders feel very similar to you, right? Because I think that especially as ambitious individuals, right, in your early 20s, you want to be kind of like almost perfect, right, in everything that you're doing, and you want to keep excelling and all of that. And what I've really heard is it's okay to not be perfect, right, and enjoy the journey, and to your point, what you just shared. So thank you so much, Greta. This was such a pleasure getting to know you, hearing about how carefully nurturing programs that you've built. I'm sure everyone at Tegria really truly values you as a leader, and also the level of care that you've instilled within the organization. So thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us today.
Thank you so much. It's always been a pleasure to speak with you and to, you know, care for the people at Tegria. So I love that they let me love on them and care for them.
Thank you for joining us on the Wellbeing Ignites While Doing podcast, brought to you by OOT Social Health. We hope today's conversation has sparked new insights and inspired you to prioritize well-being in your journey to organizational success. Remember, when well-being ignites, well-doing follows. Stay tuned for more episodes as we continue to explore the power of human-centric leadership. Until then, be well and lead with purpose.